You're listening to Culture Matters, a podcast exploring the intersection of faith and culture. What's going on, guys? It's Tamarcus, and I'm excited to be here today with a very special guest, a dear friend and mentor and brother of mine, Pastor Charles Wilson from The Hill Church in Roanoke, Virginia. Pastor Charles and his bride, Trinae, planted this church with the hopes of being able to administer the gospel of Jesus Christ to the spiritual, ethnic, historical, and economic needs of their community. Pastor Charles is a passionate leader, meek pastor, loving husband and father, and again, as I said, a dear brother of mine. So I'm so glad to have him here with us to share with you all, Pastor Charles Wilson. What's going on, bro?
Thank you, Tamarcus. I appreciate being here. Thank you for that intro. Can you follow me everywhere I go and just kind of give that intro?
Oh, 100%. That's just the elevator pitch, too. So glad to have you here with us. Man, just give you a little bit of where we've been and where we want to go today. So we've been examining how our culture and our world really has changed since we've been plagued by the ills of COVID a few years ago. And so since that time, we've covered a course of topics. We've talked through how has that affected anxiety and doubt and burnout in people and even in pastors and ministry. And then also we've had some episodes examining some of the kind of external issues surrounding the church. And so what has that looked like in justice efforts, in politics, in the rise of Christian nationalism? And so as a counterpoint to some of those things and maybe a more positive take of, okay, we've explored some of the dangers or ways that things get really complicated or directions we don't want to go, what should we be doing? How should we be using our time? And there's a number of ways to answer that question. But one of the ways we want to talk about now particularly is through the church, through church planning. How is it that planning churches and the church being present in communities, how does this function as an alternative to affecting change in communities, maybe than some of the lesser stories that we see in our culture? And so maybe just start by sharing with us what led you and your wife to start to plant a church in Roanoke, Virginia in the first place?
Yeah, good question. And it's that's a lot to unpack from your front conversation. We moved here in 2017, June 2017. We were in Dallas and our oldest son was going to school out here in Liberty, which is about an hour from where we're located currently. And on the way back, we stopped here. Long story short, we just started feeling the Lord calling us here to plant. We had been a part of a church plant maybe 10 years prior, and we weren't excited at all about church planting. In fact, on our trip to drop him off at school, we were listening to a podcast from Matt. We were on 30 in Little Rock, and they were talking about church planting versus revitalization. And because our experience in a real hard community was so hard, we really liked where we were in Dallas, having resources, having a staff, having insurance, and all the finer things of ministry, and even actually getting paid. When we did ministry prior, there was no resources, there was no tuition reimbursement or any of those things.
Yeah.
And so church planting economically didn't make sense for us. We really liked the experience in Texas. But on that trip in 2016, we were convinced that's what the Lord was calling us to do. And so we began to try to learn, how do you plant a church? And our church that we were a part of in Dallas was about 30 years old at the time. And so they were pretty far away from church planting. They weren't involved in church planting. The church we were a part of in Jersey that planted, they just figured it out. So we didn't have any formal training. And so we decided to try to get some training to come out here to plant a church. And the only things that we knew was our experience in being in established churches, that one experience being a part of a church plant, and knowing that there were some things on the ground that we wanted to address at the time. So this was 2016. We were an established middle-class African-American predominantly church, and we recognized in the culture there were some things happening that the church wasn't addressing. So we just went armed with our experience, what we were seeing in the culture, what we started to feel. And we really had to start taking some time to figure out what was happening on the ground where we were going. And so that all of that led us to relocate and move to land where we are currently in Roanoke, Virginia. Once we got on the ground here, quickly found out we weren't superheroes coming in to bring the gospel. the gospel was already here, and which kind of disoriented me a little bit, because I was like, okay, Lord, what exactly are you calling us here to do? And that summer, you might recall, we called for a prayer walk from some of our friends and family, did some evangelism training with that team. We walked throughout the city sharing the gospel. And by the time we got back to our house that night, this was August 12th, 2017, we turned on the news and we saw the incident in Charlottesville happening. Hmm. And that really was the Lord speaking to me saying, I called you here to speak into stuff like this. That was a big turn for us. That was a loud thing for us, because Charlottesville is not that far from us. We're talking maybe like an hour or something. And so we recognized, all right, we need to plant a church not only that speaks into the things that we brought, but also that. And it can't just be a value on the wall. Hmm. It actually has to be something that we actually do.
Yeah. I'm going to run back for a second, because you started to get into something that I think is important to maybe tease out even in y'all's methodology. So I myself don't have experience church planning at the time, but I remember even thinking, as I knew you guys were going to launch, expecting this, okay, you hit the ground, you start evangelizing, you find a place to meet, you get some people, maybe you start doing a Bible study gathering. You guys actually took a good amount of time before you even started vocalizing to a lot of people, like, hey, we're starting a church here. Talk a little bit about that time and why. Yeah. Y'all spent that time the way you did.
Yeah. Texas taught me that. I lived in Jersey my whole life. All my peoples are from Jersey, South Jersey. And so when I moved to Texas, I moved to Texas as a South Jersey guy. I like the Eagles. I like the Phillies. I like the Sixers. They don't like that there. Texas is its own country. Like, y'all say that, but it's real.
Amen.
I learned pretty quickly I was an outsider. And what Texas taught me was, you took no time to respect nor appreciate the culture that you just stepped into. Mm. You came with your experiences and who you are, just like a terrible missionary. And so even though I became a youth pastor day one, I never became a Texan. After being there 10 years, I figured out how to get by. I figured out that I could not wear a Donovan McNabb jersey in the pulpit on a jersey day. I figured out what's going too far. So Texas taught me, you better respect the culture you're going into and take time to appreciate what's the beauty that's already there. And so 6 months before we moved to Roanoke, I downloaded all the news apps for this region. I read everything historically I could find, from Googling to Wikipedia to anything I could find about the history of the context. But once I got on the ground, we spent 2 years just being people living in Roanoke, respecting the history, meeting with city leadership, finding the people who have been serving in this context for years, meeting with visiting and worshiping at as many churches as possible. Building real relationships with pastors and parachurch ministries, so that not only did it help us say that the gospel isn't moving here, we actually gained an appreciation of the past. We actually gained an appreciation of the hard work that's happening here. And when we would speak about the city, we spoke with a lot of respect. And so we moved slow that way because of my experience in Texas. I got a lot of stiff arms in Texas trying to bring my jersey stuff. For instance, when I was a youth pastor in South Dallas, I threw this amazing Friday night event for my youth ministry, and no one showed up. And on Sunday, this dad came up to me and he said, let me help you with something. We do football here on Friday nights. Hmm. And so you keep throwing your little events, we ain't coming. And I learned quickly, you got to respect the culture and what you're going in. I'm not saying culture is king, but I am saying if you go in there with very disrespectful, without learning the rhythms. Starbucks doesn't even do that. They go into new regions and they learn quickly.
Yeah.
The main high school here, they learn. Walmart does the same thing. You walk into Walmart in a different region, they have the local college thing. And so church planning should be the same way. You shouldn't just pop in. And so for us, it was a 2-year journey.
Man, what I love about that so much, because I've even heard the pitches sometimes when it comes to whether it's church planning or missions, where there's a way you can talk about maybe the community or the needs of the community that stress the negatives. And no doubt every community is going to have that. But I remember and recall even present just the way you guys fight so passionately for the community, not just against the negatives, but for all of the beauty that's there and the people that when the relationships that are built, that there is a, y'all's hearts have become tethered to the place God has put you. And I think that's huge for us, wherever we find ourselves or whatever capacity of ministry that we're doing. Another thing I want to see, I know we've talked a bit about how from the outside looking in, talked about some of the unique issues that popped up. Charlotte, for those of you who maybe aren't so familiar, there was a shooting in Charlottesville that's not too far from Roanoke, Virginia. And so even some of that starts to leak into the context of where you are. It may feel as though, man, a church isn't the best response to that. Like, we need these other nonprofits, or we need this other work or this other strategy. How did you guys see the church, like a church being the vehicle and an answer to be able to resolve or to be a part of resolving some of the issues that you saw in the community?
That's a good question. So I have to be honest, I'm biased because I'm a Christian. And so as a Christian, I've completely entrusted Jesus as the Lord of my life. And I mean that in what a Lord should be. My master is where I get direction. He has saved my soul, and I am forever grateful. And so I actually believe that is the solution for every person around me. And I also believe in the simple value that we should be good churchmen and women. Not everyone should be pastors and all these other things, but I think we should be good churchmen and women. I believe that for my own kids. I just want my boys to just be good men that go to a church with their family. And so on a simple level, I don't put my hope in anything else. I actually believe when Jesus says in Matthew 16, and he's standing there with this backdrop behind him with his disciples, and he begins to ask them, who do people say that I am? And he's listening to how his name is trending out there. He's actually got these guys standing in one of the most deplorable places in their region, where it is the Las Vegas of their day. It is not a place for good Jewish people to be. And he is asking this almost like his graduation question to his guys. And then he turns and he says, well, who do you say that I am? Peter gives the great answer. This is one of the times Peter hits the ball out of the park. He says, you are the Messiah. And Jesus says, upon this truth, man, that I'm going to build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail. In that context, in that conversation, Jesus is standing in a very hard place to do ministry. He is standing in a place that is challenging, deplorable. They're practicing all types of wickedness in that culture, in that area. And this is the place where Jesus kicks off this conversation. The first time the church is mentioned, it is upon doing it in a place that would be hard. And Jesus is, I think, setting the tone for us that we should not be just looking for places that are easy and make sense. And this is why I have friends who plant and go to areas and they launch 2 months after they move to this new area, because their ideas, they're transplanting basically their ideas, their culture, and what they did somewhere else into a new location, not considering the location that they're in. It's easier that way. A lot of church planting follows economic models. It doesn't often follow the Spirit. Following the Spirit means you're probably going to be at a disadvantage. You're probably going to need the Spirit if you're going to be successful. You're going to need Jesus. And so for us, everything about what we do is not the typical model for church planting. It is actually all surrendered and submitted to the power of the Lord to do the work. And so with that, I actually think, as our church grows, as people see people coming to know him as Lord, as you see good church men and women who are just people who go to church and are great in the community, great in the culture, great teachers, great fathers, people who cut their grass, apologize to their neighbors when they offend them, work hard with integrity. I actually think these types of things, people are going to ask them, man, why do you love me so much? Why are you such a good person? And I believe they should be able to give the same answer I gave in the beginning. Man, Jesus touched me. He changed me. Man, I want you to meet him. Can I share a little bit about him with you? I believe on a simple level, it's that we should have just good churchmen and women, people who love Jesus for real. And they're not looking for other sources to solve these problems. I'm not looking for the government to solve all these problems. Though we have good churchmen and women who should be engaged in those spaces, that's not where I'm putting my primary. The gates of hell should be concerned when good church men and women are doing what Jesus called them to do. That this is an offensive church, that we are moving towards the problems, that we're moving into the neighborhood, that we are cutting our grass and we're mentoring kids in the community, where we are renovating spaces, where we are bringing health and we're bringing light, and we are not retreating and moving in the opposite direction. We should be moving towards the culture, if Matthew 16 is right.
What I hear you saying, we had our conversation a little bit ago about institutions. Adam Griffin made the statement. He was like, oftentimes it's so easy for us to point the finger at an institution when things are going wrong or when it's not the way we want it to be. And he was like, at the end of the day, like, institutions are made up of people. Like, there's somebody behind it. There's somebody running it. There's people who are make up the cogs of the machine, so to speak. I don't mean that in a derogatory way. But people make up the institution. And what I hear you saying is the church is so powerful because it's not trying to change this ethereal thing. It's like it's most prominently concerned with the human heart. And as people who are engaged and are in part of it and fall in love with Jesus and then go out and live their lives in light of it, as you said, as their Lord and their Savior and their Master, that in turn affects all of the spheres in which they re-enter in. And so such a beautiful picture to think through how even just the Big C church operates wherever it's found. Something I guess I want to add on to that, because I know also in y'all's context, you lead a multi-ethnic church. It's a diverse church in more ways than one, not just race, economic status and culture, the whole nine. How do you navigate, right, as you get people coming in to be good church men and women, and they bring in their ideologies of all the different places, and you got some that want to lead here and some maybe have their hope here and some have their hope here, as you're trying to get everyone to rally around the goal and the aim of being fully submitted to Jesus as you affect change in a community? How do you navigate those waters? Because it feels like oftentimes you've got to pick one side, and it feels like a side wins and a side loses. But how do you keep from doing that? How have y'all managed those difficulties?
So we're 5 years in, and the two of those, or maybe even three of those, are COVID years. And so that's a whole nother conversation of being a church plant 9 months before COVID.
Perfect timing.
That's a whole, exactly.
Talk genius. About needing the spirit.
So I think clarity of the vision is definitely something like your leadership needs to know where you're going and why you're going there, because you got to constantly have that conversation with people. Someone hit me up this week to say, hey, they come out of a context out of Louisiana. Black History Month was celebrated in the church. I noticed we didn't celebrate Black History Month in our church. What's up with that? Obviously, I'm African-American pastor, and so they feel comfortable saying that to me. So, well, we don't have a specific reason why not. There are often times in our church where we celebrate different things when we find it important, but it's not our main thing. Our main thing isn't to pick the one thing to celebrate. And so every pastor is constantly being pulled to prioritize things that people prioritize in the church. Some of those things are good. Some of those things are bad. But there's not a week that goes by I don't get a critique on something that I'm not celebrating or we're not focusing on. I've been at this long enough to recognize that Jesus was pulled in those same types of directions, and he was pretty clear about his mission and his assignment. Jesus, they're out of wine. Mom, what does this have to do with? And yet he did it. So there are times where I actually do things or adhere to things that is important to our people. But some of those things do detract from our mission or our assignment. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I make sure of is, for instance, because I was a pastor in Dallas in 2016, and we failed to help our congregation navigate through those waters, we had backroom prayer and conversations about political things, but we'd never out front help teach people how to think about navigating the culture, navigating their family, navigating their job place. And so when we got hit with all of the things, the perfect storm in 2016, the church specifically was behind the eight ball. Well, I've had the opportunity to learn from that, to live through 2016, to live through all of these transitions. We have pre-conversations about all of these things. We continuously, part of our mission and our vision, we recite every day when we do our announcements so that our church knows who we are. We're going to have hard conversations. When you join our church, before you even get to the covenant, you get to read through our agreement around conflict. We will address conflict. We will have good conversations, and we will figure out how to work through things ahead of time. But I want you to sign this so you know we will be coming to you if there's a problem. Part of that's baked into who we are. And so I constantly bring up, we constantly allow the text, whenever the text brings us to tension where we should be having a conversation, we let the text take us there and we don't ignore it. And so we have people who are far on this end and we have people who are far on the other end, and we constantly remind them we are far into Jesus and we are not far into any of those things. They are not priorities. Just yesterday, as I was preaching, talking about how the church is a family, just brought up the idea of this metaphor, meaning inside of all of our families, there's mess. And because if we love each other deeply, we can have hard conversations about, we should, about almost anything. And so as a baseline for our church, it's constantly bringing before people, we will have this conversation. We will not allow us to be divided. For our leaders here, for our deacons, we constantly have this conversation that part of their job is, as they go through our church, is to look for areas where the church could be divided or separated. I think we have to give extra attention to that because we're a diverse church, economically, age, but even just Christian background. We have, because we're a diverse church, people come from so many different, Pentecostal, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Baptist. Like, we have so many different even thoughts on that coming into here. And so our leaders are constantly reminded, part of your job is to make sure you protect the unity of the brethren. And we talk about Paul saying, hey, we got these two women here bugging. I need you guys to help them work this out. Like Paul is speaking right to in chapter 2 of Philippians about this unity of the church. And I think that is something that we have to protect and we have to go towards, so that this election year coming up, our people have been warned. We've had pre-conversations. We've been talking about this election coming up for months now. Even last year, we were like, just getting you guys ready for these hard conversations coming next year. People are going to be bugging. You're going to see things on TV. You're going to be listening to the news. Someone's going to have a lawn sign. I don't want us breaking up because you put something weird on Facebook, because if you do, we're going to have good conversations about that as you love your siblings in this place. Yeah. And if you don't want to do that, you probably should go to a whole other place where you could be there. But you chose to live in a hard context, is what we tell our people. You chose to be in a place where we have good conversation and we don't just see something on Facebook and ignore it, but we actually sit down and we have coffee. Mm. And so intentional and proactive.
I love that. So much of that is needed. And that's part of the discipleship, right? It's part of us helping. How do we submit every thought, every idea, every ideology that we hold on to the word of Christ? And I think there's a way, you've talked a lot about even just like internally how you guys operate. And earlier you mentioned just the amount of time that you guys spent getting to know the community, getting to know the stakeholders, getting to know other churches and those who work in the political realm in y'all's community. How have you guys leveraged those partnerships or cooperated with some of the things already going on in the community, and why have you found that to be important to do so? I know something that I've heard you say is, I think you said it earlier, like, you guys didn't come in to be a hero, but you've looked around, you've seen the beauty that's already there, the good work that's already being done, and have come in as partners with that. And so how have you done that? And how is that maybe different than coming in with a savior mentality?
This goes back to my background in Jersey, seeing a lot of nonprofit organizations and seeing churches try to be everything and not work together with other churches. I've noticed that some of those programs only lasted a few years. I noticed in hard areas, basically, it's like you said, with church plants that, and I use a strong word, I think people pimp poverty. And so we highlight all the broken things so that we can get resources, and that it's almost like when you see the kids and they're like in Africa with the flies on them, you're presenting the worst things so that people can emotionally give to those areas. But you do a disservice for the people there, that those people are not only made in the image of God, but that's not all of the story. Like, I'd rather you not give and know all the story than show you the worst part of the community and insult the people who are there, and so that my little corny organization can be seen as the heroes. I think that I teach liberty, and we talk a lot about when helping hurts, about organizations that fly in and want to be the saviors, and they're actually doing more of a disservice. Well, I take that for our church plant, is we're not here to hurt. I've watched organizations do that, and I've noticed in hard areas, because everyone's going after the same dollars, they all are appealing to the same people, and then because they don't have integrity, because they're driven for the wrong reasons, they end up crashing and burning, and then the community suffers more. And so for us, we're here to complement the community in ways that we can. And so we had plans, for instance, our area is a food desert. We had plans to figure out how to bring a small grocery store into the facility that we're renovating. But then the Goodwill down the street from us just got $10 million from federal funds and state funds to build a grocery store. So we completely abandoned that idea because they're building a grocery store. But what we also know is needed in our community is a gym. We have senior citizens who walk around in our parking lot to exercise. We have some of the highest rates of diabetes in our community. And so instead of leveraging our resources to compete and build a grocery store, we're going to put a nice gym in our building. And we have medical people in our church and tons of people who want to help with that community development. That way, we can, now we have a great grocery store. Now we have a gym. Then maybe we'll open a kitchen where people can learn how to make healthy food options from after they buy an eggplant from the grocery store. They can come down and learn how to make salsa or something like that. And so for us, we're thinking of ways of complementing and leveraging to bring more good for the community. We're not driven by the same things some of these nonprofit organizations are driven. They're driven by their bottom line, where they can find funds. We're driven by what, how can we bring flourishing to the community? So we can be a simple, amazing Bible church in the middle of a hard community doing great things. And now we don't have to try to be everything to the community, but what are the things that we can do and how can we help complement it? And how can we release God's people to be a part of that?
As I was hearing you talk through that, it made me just think of the passage in Jeremiah when God is calling to the people to pray and to be effective in the community where he has put them. Because as it flourishes, so you will flourish. Yep. And I think it makes me think that there's levels, as you say, where they're not necessarily motivated by the same thing you are. And there's probably even spaces where, you know, if you got down to doctrinally specifically, for sure they're not. But it's like at the end of the day, we're all trying to serve this community. And there are ways where we probably have to draw a line and say, well, we're not going to step into this realm. But it's, hey, if you're about feeding people who are hungry, I'm about feeding people who are hungry. So let's come together in that way.
Yeah. I guess two thoughts. So we ran into pushback from the city. Like, we're a church. So I've been told to my face that you guys aren't inclusive enough. And so there's a thing that we run called Northwest Love Campaign, where our actual city wanted to create their own thing for our community because they didn't want our thing, because we're not accepting or something like that. And then I knew that was code language. And so what I said, the response to them was, well, I take offense to that because there's no other organization in our community that's planting trees, that's renovating facilities, that's adopted schools, that's mentoring kids, that's bringing college students in within proximity, doing what we're doing that is not coming from the government. We are actually citizens who live, work, and play in this community, and we're putting our resources towards the things I just mentioned. And so if you're trying to hit me with some, we're not inclusive to all people for our church, and my response back to him was, I'm pretty sure you have locks on your door and you regulate who comes in and out of your house. And so, but I'm pretty sure you also appreciate these cherry blossom trees that are blooming in the community that this church planted. And so we are doing good in this community, but we also are not going to allow you to tell us that we can't be involved in the flourishing of our community. Then my next conversation there goes to this. I had the superintendent of our schools come to sit in our facility. We have some challenges educationally in our community, just kids not reading in seventh and eighth grade. It's just struggles. We are going to start a school, but we are not abandoning the schools in our community. Like, we adopt schools, we feed our teachers, we do mentoring things in our schools, and we're starting a school. Like, our church should not just retreat. This is Matthew 16, retreat, go start our own thing for our kids, for our good Christian kids. Like, we want the flourishing of all people. And so we're moving into all these places. We want our superintendent to know that we are not just here to start our own thing in competition, but we want our kids reading, because at the end of the day, if these kids are leaving through high school, and ours specifically, and they're not able to read, they're not able to function, then at the end of the day, it's going to lead them somewhere, and we think it's not good. And so how do we move in and be actually workers of good, where everyone sees this as a resource and goes, yo, that church is with us. They are not against us, that they are actually bringing in things for the right reason. And for some people, we've received criticisms just because we're a church. It's not even like they know us or they like studied our doctrine. It's just, oh, you're a church, so you must not love all people.
there's something that I hope that sticks out, and this might be a good spot where we can start to bring it to a close, but if there is a way in which, and I know that we all feel the pressure in some way, whether you're leading a church as a pastor or minister or just a part of a church where it's like these different subject matters or these pressures from different entities come in, and it feels as though you have to choose between fidelity to Christ and the gospel or being a good partner in the community. And it's, well, if I want to be a good partner here, we might have to bend on this. Or if we're going to stand firm on this, then I have to neglect being a good partner. And really though that may feel like a real, like those are the only options, there's another way where we can be so involved. We can be such a partner within our communities that even though we're not willing to bend doctrinally and theologically, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak, right? It's like the effect that you guys have been able to have on a community. There's so many people that are like, hey, I don't know about that part, but I can't deny what you're doing with our kids. I can't deny the change that I've already seen. And so I'm for that. And so we could figure that other part out later, but we can come together here. And I think that just that offers such a level of hope for, like I say, hope, I know, especially for you guys and y'all's members, but hopefully for those even who are listening, as you're thinking through your own church that you're leading or a part of and how you guys can be effective in the communities where God has put you, not leaning doctrinally, but also not forsaking being a active participant in what the Lord would do in your communities. And so, man, thank you for just sharing that vision and that experience that you've had. Maybe as we close out, could you just maybe share, if somebody is listening and they're interested in church planning or want to learn more about the model of church planning y'all are doing and how they could support or learn more, how could they reach out or get in touch?
Yeah. Well, you can definitely hit me up directly, charles@thehillchurch.com, or you can info@thehillchurch.com, and we'd definitely be able to communicate any area of interest wherever you're going, especially a hard place or a multicultural, multi-ethnic place. To actually, in closing to that last thing you said, I'd love to add on that. So there are partnerships that we do with people in our context for the good of the people in our context. And the way that I sit through it real quick, and a lot of people, I try to remind people, especially with the guy who came and sat with us that day and was critiquing us from the city, many of these people who are in these places, jobs are to do good for the people that they've been enlisted by to sit in these seats. And so from our city council, to our police, to our superintendent of schools, this isn't just about their personal philosophies. Like, we have put these people in positions to instill and to enact just things for our people. We are all to have clean water. We are all to have clean air to breathe. These are justice jobs. Our police department is to bring justice. And so I first go and I look at some of these people and I remind them of this. Your job is to do good things for the people who are under you. That includes church people. So don't exclude us, that we are to do good for people. And I understand you have these weird political persuasions, and I can't rock with you there. But when I see things in my community as far as people starving or kids who can't read or food desert or children with diabetes, now I move into, well, where can our interests converge that I don't have to compromise? And this goes back to one of our earlier things, is I make sure I'm not owned or tied to any strings so that we can't be who we are. And so if I am not able to be who we are as a church, and you're saying I got to have a truncated gospel, then I can't rock with that. But if you're coming and you're sitting aside your issues or your agenda to say, hey, how do we bring good things in our community? Because this is what my job is. Well, then yeah, our interests converge and we can go do that. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you do something that contradicts where my interests lie, that speaks against what we teach on Sunday, so I say we can do neutral or we can do explicit. Neutral is, let's bring a sports team to our community. Like, we need our kids running around. We need mentors doing all that. I can rock with you there. That's neutral for me. Explicit is, I get to stand up and say Jesus is the only way. Anything that detracts is where I go, yeah, I can't rock with that. So anything that goes against that. So that's how I quickly go real quick to say who I can work with and who I can't work with.
Well, man, Charles, PC as I call you, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for just your time. in the work that you're doing. Like I say, I encourage you all, if you're interested to learn more about the Hill Church and the work that they're doing in Roanoke, look them up online and see ways you can partner or learn more and maybe bring some of that good work into your own community.
Amen. Thank you to Marcus Ragland and the work that you're doing there. Appreciate you. Keep up the good work.
Appreciate you, my man. Thank you for listening to Culture Matters. This episode is produced by Chelsea Conway with editing and support from The Good Podcast Company. Be sure to check the show notes to connect to us and our guests. See you next time.